Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Tes Zayin. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur three lines from the top of Daf Tes Zayin. The Gemara opens up with a quote from that which was mentioned at the very end of our previous shiur, but in this case the quote will be from the Tanaic source in full. And on the side of the Gemara, you notice we have a topic heading where we've written Mifgash Chachmei Yisrael, a meeting between the sages of Israel, in Rabbi Doisa ben Hyrcanus, the Ochiv HaCharif Yoimison, with meeting with Rabbi Doisa ben Hyrcanus and his brother, who was very sharp, he was Charif, his name was Yoimison, Al Basis Shmua Shehitir Tsoros Erva Lisyabim. The meeting took place on the basis of having heard that one of them was Matir, allowed the marriage of a co-wife of an erva to the yavam. Of course, that was the topic that we've been discussing in the last few dapim at great length. So now the Gemara, three lines from the top, gufa. This is a quote of that which was mentioned earlier. Bimei Rabbi Doisa ben Hyrcanus hitiru tsara sabas le'ochin. In the days of this Rav, Rabbi Doisa, they allowed the marriage of a tsara, of a co-wife of the daughter, co-wife of an erva, to the yavam. And this presented a difficulty to the sages. Rabbi Doisa ben Hyrcanus, we refer to as a great man, and they thought that he was the one that was matir, that allowed this practice. Now, as we've learned in previous dapim, tsaras habas, or tsaras ha'erva, is, according to Beis Hillel, generally the authority that we would follow, is something that is prohibited in marrying the yavam. Yibum is not allowed with tsaras erva. However, there was the opinion of Beis Shammai that we have learned that does allow it. And here you have a great rabbi, Rabbi Doisa ben Hyrcanus, who seemed to have been one who permitted that kind of marriage, a yavam with a tsaras erva. And this presented a difficulty for the popular rabbis, the bulk of the rabbinic authority of the time. And this was exacerbated by the fact that Rabbi Doisa was a Chacham Gadol, was a great man. V'einav komu milavo lebeis hamedrash. It's a colorful expression, meaning that his eyesight became very poor, and he, as a result, didn't walk out of his house. He didn't go to the Beis Medrash. So if people wanted to confront him, to talk to him, they would have to visit him. So literally, Einov Komumi, his eyes stood, meaning they stood still, they stopped functioning in their ability to see, and as a result, he couldn't come to the Beis Medrash. Omru Mi Yelech V'Yodio. So amongst the sages, the question came up, who should go to speak to him, to question his apparent ruling? Omar Lohen Rabbi Yoshua, Ani Elech. Rabbi Yoshua said to them, I will go. The Achrovmi and following him, who else should go? Answer: Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. The Achrovmi and along with him, who else should go? Rabbi Akiva. It seems it's my own understanding, not having seen this in any of the commentaries, but this appears to be a court, a Beis Din. The need for three Rabbonim seemed to be of uppermost importance here, so they sought out three very highly distinguished Rabbonim to go to confront Rabbi Doisa concerning this ruling. And as we say, the three seems to be symbolic of having a Beis Din. Holchu v'amdu al pesach beis. So these three great luminaries approached his house, stood by the entrance. Nichnasa shivchasoi v'omrolo. The servant, the bondmaid of Rabbi Dosa ben Hukus, went into where he was seated and said to him, Rabbi Chachmei Yisrael, boy Nezlecha, the sages of Israel have come to visit you. Omar la, yikansu. So he instructs, let them come in. V'nichnasu, and they entered. Tofsoi l'Rabbi Yoshua v'hoshivu al mita shel zav. He grabbed Rabbi Yoshua and had him sit down on a golden bed. Omar le, Rabbi Yoshua says to Rabbi Dosa, Rabbi, emor le talmidcha achir v'yeshev. Invite your other Talmud in to come and sit. Omar lo, mihu. So he says, well, who is this other one? Answer, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. It is Rabbi Elazar, the son of Azariah. Omar. So Rabbi Dosa ben Hurkanes said, ah, v'yeshlo ben Azariah chavirenu. So our friend Azariah has a son, a distinguished son, Korah Olav HaMikro Hazeh, and regarding this relationship between Azariah and his son, so Rabbi Dosa recited the following pasuk: Nar ho isi gamzokanti v'lo ro isi tzadik nezov v'zaro mevakesh lochem. I was young, and at that time, so I saw Azariah. He was my friend. I gamzokanti, I became aged, and I see that he has a son, and I don't see a tzaddik nezov. I don't see the tzaddik abandoned, meaning Azariah, who was a tzaddik. I see that the Almighty granted him a wonderful son, and v'zaru mevakesh lechem, nor do I see the tzaddik begging for bread. And it should be noted that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was in fact also a very, very wealthy individual. Tofsoi v'shivo al mito shazov. So, upon hearing all of this, Rabbi Dosa grabs Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and has him sit on a golden bed. Omar lo, Rebbe, emor le talmidcho acher v'yeshev. So Rabbi Yeshua says to Rabbi Dosa, please instruct your other Talmud to come and sit down. Omar le mi umihu. He asks, so who is he? Answer, Akiva ben Yosef. Akiva ben Yosef is the famous Rabbi Akiva. Omar le, Atahu Akiva ben Yosef. So Rabbi Dosa says, are you Akiva ben Yosef Sheshimcha Hoylech Misoif Ha'ilam V'Ad Sofo, that whose name goes from one end of the world to the other? Rabbi Akiva, as you can rest assured, was a world famous personality, the greatest of the Talmudic sages of his time, and so he was invited to also come and sit down. Shev beni shev, kindly sit down. Kamoischa yirbu b'Yisrael, the likes of you should increase in Israel. I'm not going to elaborate on this point right now, but I highly recommend that one should look into the Maharshal commentary to see more about this particular statement. We continue in the Gemara. Hischilu misavim oisoi b'halochos ad shigiu l'tzor sabas. They started in a roundabout fashion talking to Rabbi Dosa about other halachas. They didn't confront him directly concerning the issue of Tzoras Habas until they eventually got to that topic. And as far as why they didn't confront him directly on that topic, so regarding this matter also the Marshal elaborates. But we're going to continue in the Gemara text. Omrule, Tzoras Habas. Now, once they got to the topic of Tzoras Habas, the co-wife of the daughter, which is again illustrative of all Ervas, what do you say about co-wife of forbidden relative vis-a-vis the co-wife doing the mitzvah of Yibum with the surviving brother? Omar lahen machlokes beishamai ubeis hillel. The topic of Tzoras Erva is a controversy between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Halacha kedivrei mi. So they asked Rabbi Dosan, like whom does the halacha follow? Does the Tzoras Habas do Yibum like Beis Shammai, or no? Is she sent out to marry someone else? She goes Lashuk without doing Yibum and Chalitza? Omar lahen, halacha kebeis Hillel. Rabbi Dosa takes a stand. He says, the halacha is like Beis Hillel. Omru lo, v'alo mishimcha, omru halacha Beis Shammai. They confronted Rabbi Dosa and said, but in your name, it has been promulgated that the halacha is like Beis Shammai. How is it then that now, when you're speaking with us, you're ruling the halacha is like Beis Hillel? Omar lahem. So Rabbi Dosa inquires, regarding what you heard, Doisa shamatem, o ben hurkanes shamatem, did you hear that Doisa said to go like Beis Shammai, or did you hear without a, without the individual name, the first name, did you hear simply Ben Hyrcanus said the halacha is like Beis Shammai? Omru lei chaye Rebbe stam shamanu. So they said by all means what we heard was Ben Hyrcanus paskins like Beis Shammai without a first name. Omar lahem. So Rabbi Dosa tells them, I have news for you. Ach koton yeshli b'chor sotanhu v'yoynuson shmo. I have a younger brother, so the Ben Hyrcanus would be appropriate for him just as for me, and he is a b'chor sotan. The expression b'chor sotan means he's a very wise, very sharp individual, and he doesn't back down from anything. In other words, once he reaches his conclusion, he will not back down from it, even if it's against the public, the majority opinion. That's why he's called, that's why the term Sotan is used for him. Bechor being, Bechor the Marsho explains, has a double portion in general, so he has like a double portion of brilliance. And Sultan, he doesn't back down from what other people try to say if once he is convinced of his opinion. And his actual name is Yoynuson. So you have a person here who's Yoynuson ben Hyrcanus. For who mitamidei Shammai? He is a student of the school of Shammai. And hence, when you heard that Ben Hyrcanus said source of Isis Mutter, you were hearing what my brother had ruled. V'hizharu sheli kapich eschem ba'alochas. And if you think to confront him, so hizhar means be careful that he should not cut you down with halochas. In a Torah debate, he can be victorious. V'fishyeshimo shlosh meas tshuvas v'tzoras abas shimutas. He's got 300 different responses legitimatizing a marriage of tzoras abas to the yavam. Avol meid ani olai shamayim v'oretz, but I, says Rabbi Dosa, who was much older than his younger brother Yoynuson, he says, I testify in the name of heaven and earth, sha'al meducha zu yoshav Chagai Hanovi, that on this platform there sat the prophet Chagai. Chagai was a prophet who lived, was at the end of the era of prophecy, lived into the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash period. And Rabbi Dosa is testifying that the prophet sat right over here, V'yomar Shloish Shadvarim, and he said three things. One, Tzora Sabas Asura. Now that we emphasize with a dash underline, because that's the main point in our discussion. Two more halachas are mentioned, and the Gemara will deal with them as the Gemara continues. The second halacha that Chagai had said, Amon and Moav ma'asrin ma'isur oni b'shvias. Amon and Moav were regions right outside the land of Israel, and technically speaking, they were conquered in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu and became part of the land of Israel. However, with the expulsion and exile of the tribes during the Churban Bayis Rishon, so the status of different parts of Israel changed with the exile, the expulsion, the destruction, and the subsequent return in the time of Ezra. Now, as a result of that change, Amon and Moab, these regions bordering the land of Israel, will cultivate produce during the Shemitah year. The laws of Shemitah will not apply to Amon and Moav, and hence, what does take place during the Shemitah year is the farmers there have to tithe Meiser Oni, the Meiser Oni tithe during the Shemitah year. In other words, the halacha of leaving fields fallow and no tithing does not apply anymore to Amon and Moav, and here we're talking about the prophet Chagai, who lived into the second temple, is testifying. And number three, umekablim gerim minha kardoyim uminha tarmoidim, and that we can accept converts from these areas, from the kardoyim and the tarmoidim. Now, we go back to the story where the sages entered and are now going to exit from their visit with Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus and their confrontation with Yonason ben Hyrcanus, Rabbi Dosa's younger brother. Tona, kishenichnasu, nichnasu bepesach echad. When the sages entered, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and Rabbi Akiva visited Rabbi Yeshua. Upon their entrance, they entered through one entranceway. That's kishenichnasu, nichnasu bepesach echad. However, kishiyatsu, yatsu b'shloisha psachim. Upon their departure, each one went through a different door. They exited through a different doorway. The Tosfos comments on this. The reason for their leaving through three different doors is that if they should confront Yonason ben Hyrcanus, he should not find all of them together and cut all of them down with his legal arguments. And if he would have been able to do that, then they would be forced to establish the halacha like him. There's another approach that Tosfos mentions, is that they deliberately went through three different doorways, though at least one of them would confront him. The Marshal has another approach to the three different doorways. By all means, look at his commentary as well. So, they exited through three different doorways, we say. Poga boi b'Rebbe Akiva. So, Yonason meets up with Rebbe Akiva. Akshi lei v'ukme. He presented his arguments, and he had him unable to respond. So that it would appear from here that Rabbi Akiva tried to argue against Yonason ben Hyrcanus, but was unsuccessful in convincing him through arguments that Tzoras Erva should be forbidden. So Yonason says to Rabbi Akiva, "Atu Akiva sheshimcha hoylech misoifa oylem v'atsoifai. Are you the Akiva whose name goes from one end of the world to the other? Ashrecha shezochiso l'shem. Fortunate are you that you have achieved such a reputation. V'adayin lo higata l'roye bokar." Now we can translate this on a very superficial level. But at the same time, one is cautioned not to leave things at that, but look into the commentaries, look into the Marshal on this topic. But for our purposes, we are going to give the very simplistic translation, where you see from this interaction, Yonason is not impressed with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva tried to argue his case, and Yonason rebutted him, and Yonason is not impressed with this man who has such a worldwide reputation. He says, you're lucky you've got such a name, and you haven't even reached the level of Roye Bokar, of a cowboy. In other words, Roye Bokar, people that graze cattle. The Gemara in Sanhedrin deals with the issue of Roe Boker in the context of their believability and trustworthiness as being, we'll say, questionable. Omar lo, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva responds, you're saying that I haven't reached even the level of a cowhand? The afilu l'roye tzon. And you can look at this as a statement of extreme modesty. And Rabbi Akiva is saying, I haven't even reached the level of a shepherd. However, when you look into the Marshal commentary, you see a totally different take on this. And what the gist of this is that Rabbi Akiva is trying to hint to Yonason ben Hyrcanus that you might have all kinds of arguments, but the halacha of Tzoras Habas being usur is a tradition. It's a masores. And the Masores, the tradition, was started from a very famous shepherd named Moshe Rabbeinu. And that my stance is not based on arguments, but it's based on receipt of a tradition. And just like Haggai Hanavi was a shepherd, and so too Moshe Rabbeinu was a shepherd, and my position is based on being that I am following in the tradition of the famous shepherd. Now, you can see we have a new marking, the volcano shape, and on the side under the Mivne heading, this is Havlotas Noisim Shisku B'Mokor. We're highlighting topics that were mentioned in the source. Number one, Amon Umov Maser and Maiser Oni B'Shvias, the idea of tithing the poor tithe on the Shemitah year in the Amon and Moav regions. And number two, Mekablim Gerim Min Hagar Kardoyim, the acceptance of converts from the Kardoyim people. Now the Gemara. Amon Umov, Maser Maiser Oni B'Shvias. We saw that before. Notice, of course, the arrow. You can align this with the arrow above where that was quoted. The Omar Mor. It was taught, Harbe Krochim Kovshu Oyloi Mitzrayim Velo Kovshu Oyloi Bavel. There were many areas, many cities that were captured by the Oyloi Mitzrayim. Those are the Jews that came from the during the time of the Exodus of Mitzrayim. At the time of Yehoshua, the area that was conquered by them was much more expansive than the area captured or recaptured at the time of the Oyloi Bavel. So that as a result of that, the regions that achieved their original sanctity in our context refers to the status whereby produce from those areas needs to be tithed. In other words, it's not just a plot of land in the middle of Kansas, but it's a plot of land that's related to the land of Israel, and it's related to the land of Israel, so it has holiness to it, which engenders the need to practice different halachas, different laws, and specifically different tithes. However, the original landmass that was sanctified was not re-sanctified in its entirety during the return after the first temple destruction. And that's what this phrase means. The Kedusha Rishona, the original Kedusha, was binding for during its time. However, it was not a permanent Kedusha. So that at the time of the exile, after the destruction of the first temple, so the land that had been sanctified at the time of Yeshua lost its sanctity. And this concept of having lost its sanctity is what this term, Velokitcha Losid Lovo, means. Hinichum is they, the returnees, in the time of Ezra, rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash, they left these areas, many of these cities that had originally been captured by Joshua, they left them unsanctified. They didn't rededicate or re-sanctify those areas. So that the aniyim, the impoverished people who don't have fields, don't have the ability to store up food, they would have access to lands that would be cultivated, and during the Shemitah year, which when you're dealing with Israel proper, land in Israel proper cannot be cultivated, hence there's no food production and poor people won't have what to subsist upon. Rather, these areas that we're referring to here, Amon and Moab, were left unsanctified during the return of the Jews in the second Beis HaMikdash, and hence lands there being that they're not sanctified, they're not bound by the Shemitah restrictions, and rather it was ruled they can be cultivated. The Amon and Moab areas can be cultivated during the Shemitah year, and a Maiser Oni tithe would be given to the poor. So they have a source of subsistence. Umekablin Gerimin HaKardoyim, and we have in brackets VeHatar Modoyim. The Tarmodoyim, it's the name of another people, they will be dealt with a little bit later in the Gemara. We want to focus right now on this idea of that we can accept Gerim, converts from the Kardoyim. Now, accepting converts from a people indicates that those people are Gentiles. They are total Gentiles. There's no suspicion that they might be Jews of questionable heritage. So by saying that you're mekabel gerim from kardoyim, you're in effect announcing, you're declaring that the kardoyim are Gentiles. So the Gemara asks, Amy, is that so? The hot toni rami bar yecheskel, the house marking that you see here is accompanied by an aleph. There are two lishoinos in the Gemara featuring the toni rami bar yecheskel, as you will see. So this is the first loshon. The first version, you can see two lines later, there's an ikva de'ami that's squiggled on it. Ikva means a second version, or there are those that say, and you'll see how it's presented. So the Gemara asks, is this ruling really so? Toni Rami bar Yecheskel. Rami has the following Tanaic source. It says, Ein mekablin gerim min ha-kardoyim. We are not to accept converts from the kardoyim. And the Gemara will explain later why not, but for our purposes, just dealing on a procedural level, we have a seeming contradiction in sources. The source above said that your Makabel came from Kardoyim, and this source says no. Om Ravashi, Ravashi clarifies, Kartoyim Itmar, that which we said that you're not Makabel Gerim, that the source of Romi Bar Chesil really is not Kardoyim, it's Kartoyim, with a Tof as opposed to a Dalit in the name. Kidam Rinchi, as people say, Kartoyim Psulim. They're puzzle, meaning they're invalid. The people there, the Gemara will explain this later, what causes the unacceptance, but it has to do with the fact that there were Jews that intermingled amongst them, and as a result the population is full of mamzerim, illegitimate people, and hence they're, technically speaking, they are Jewish but are unfit to marry into the Jewish people. And hence, there's no discussion, there's no issue of being able to accept them as converts when they are actually Jews of questionable heritage. The Ika de Amri, another version, Toni Rami Bar Yecheskel, Ein Mekablim Gerim Min Ha Kartoyim. You'll notice this version of Rami Bar Yecheskel has Kartoyim with a Tuf in it, whereas the first version had the people spelled with a Dalit in it. So here he says, we're not to accept Gerim from the Kartoyim. My love, Hainu Kartoyim, Hainu Kardoyim. Are we not to assume that Kartoyim with a Tuf is the same as the Kardoyim? And if you say that they are one and the same, then how can it have been said before that we are Makabel Gerim from the Kardoyim? Omar Rav Ashi, Loi, Kartoyim Luchud, the Kardoyim Luchud. No, they're two separate people. The names are very similar, but they are different. Kartoye are people that were not Mekabel Gerim from them, and the Kardoye, that nation we would Mekabel Gerim from them. Kidamri and she, Kartoye Psuli. People have the saying that the Kartoye are posel. It's indicating that people has mixed into them a lot of Jewish Mamzerim. As we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice we have Roman numerals 1, and on Omid Beis you'll see number 2. They are featured under the Mivneh heading, Shnei Lishonos Rabbi Yochanan Im Mekablin Gerim Mitarmod. And if you recall, just a few lines up, we had in a brackets, V'har Tarmoidim. The reason for that is that up till now we were focusing on Kardoyim. Now we take a look, we focus now on Tarmoidim. Rabbi Yochanan v'Savio, the Amri Shavaya, both say, Ein mekablim gerim min ha-tarmoidim. From the Tarmoidim people, we do not accept converts. The Gemara asks, Umi, Omer Rabbi Yochanan hachi, would Rabbi Yochanan have really said that? And notice we have a long question, taking us 4 lines down from the top of Omid Beis. Would Rabbi Yochanan have really said this? V'atnan. We have a Tanaic source, and here just a word of background. This Tanaic source deals with blood stains. Blood stains are a topic, or is a topic within the context of women and their monthly cycle, and what we call dine nida. So these blood stains could, if they come from Jewish women, could represent a source of tum'ah, clothing that received a woman's menstrual flow, and the clothing are stained, so the clothing are tame. So we're going to deal with this topic of, we'll call it stains, or as the Gemara refers to them as ksumim. But for a kesem, too, a kesem, a stained garment to be considered tame, this would be only if they came from Jewish women. Gentile women, certainly on a Torah level, do not communicate impurity. Just by way of remez, where there is Kedusha, there is Tumah. The Gemara says, could Rabbi Yochanan have really said that we're not mekabel gerim from Tarmoid? The Hatnan, the source teaches, kohav some of my boy min rekem torim, stained garments that come from an area called rekem are tohar. For tohar means they're not defiled. Rabbi Yuda mitame, Rabbi Yuda says they are considered defiled. They shame gerim v'toyim. People from that place they call rekem are actually converts, but they, after converting, they reverted back to Gentile ways. But once a person converts in an acceptable conversion, what he does afterwards, he's doing as a sinning Jew, but not it. You cannot reverse the process of conversion if it was initially an acceptable conversion. So Rabbi Yehuda is metame the garments that have stains in them that come from Rechem on the basis of them originally having converted to Judaism. Mibein ha'ovei kechavim tahorim, garments that stained garments that come from amongst the idol worshippers, they are tar. And when we say from amongst the idol worshippers, Rashi adds where Jews do not live. And that's in line of what we said before, that Gentiles, idol worshippers, do not present us as a source of defilement. V'havinon ba, and we ask, kaposik v'toni, it says here in an unqualified fashion, we're here at the top of Amud Beis, it says, mibein ha'ovdei kechavim, the stains that come from amongst the Gentiles, from amongst the idol worshippers, v'afilu min tarmod, even if the garments come from tarmod, indicating that the garments coming from tarmod, even though there's a blood stain, they are undefiled, indicating that they are not Jewish. The Omar Rabbi Yochanan Zosomeres, this shows us mekablin gerim mitarmod. We accept gerim from that area. By all means, you should use your arrows. Look at the arrow on Omid Aleph, to which this particular arrow corresponds. And there you see, it's pointing to the line where Rabbi Yochanan said, "Ein mekablin gerim min atarmodim." And here, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, from here we see that we are mekabel gerim from Talmud. Talmud is a place of total Gentiles, and hence it lends itself, if a person should so desire, it lends itself to conversion to Judaism. The original statement of Rehum, the Roman numeral number 1, would have had us believe, and he says straight out, you're not mekabel gerim from Talmud because they're not Gentiles. The concept of conversion is only when you're going from Gentile status to Jewish status. But if they were already, let us say, Jews, but they're illegitimate, so it doesn't, the process of conversion is irrelevant to them. The Gemara continues, V'chitema, you might try to resolve the Roman numerals 1 and 2 by saying, Zois velo svirole, that Rabbi Yochanan says that this source indicates that you're Mekabel from Tar, but I don't agree with that. Still, that's not true. V'ho Omar Rabbi Yochanan, halacha kistam mishnah. The halacha follows the mishnah that was stated in a stam without an author's name attached to it, indicating that it's an authoritative mishnah. And according to the stam mishnah, we are Mekabel. So Rabbi Yochanan rules that we are Mekabel gerim from Talmud. So then the question again resurfaces. If that be the case, so how do you explain the first statement of Rabbi Yochanan says, Ein Mekablin gerim mitamud, when here he rules that we are Mekabel. We do accept converts from Talmud. The Gemara answers, Amoroi ninu valibod Rabbi Yochanan. Very simply, there are two later Amoraic opinions as to what Rabbi Yochanan himself really holds. With regard to the opinion that one does not accept Gerim from Talmud, the Gemara asks, Mi Talmud my time alone. What is the reason not to accept Gerim from Talmud? Pligi ba Rabbi Yochanan v'Savya. Savya is a name, so Rabbi Yochanan has an argument with Savya regarding the reason. Chad omar mishum avdei Shlomo v'chad omar mishum benois Yerushalayim. One opinion is that it's an area, Talmud is an area that the slaves of King Solomon had once been in, and these slaves married Jewish women. Rashi says on the second line from the top, Avdei Shlomo, Shenosu Benois Yisrael, Machmas Oishron, V'dorin Shom B'cheskes Oivdi Kochavim. In this area, Jewish women married slaves from King Solomon, who were interested in their wealth, and this opinion holds because over Oivdi Kochavim Ve'Eben Abba, Bas Yisrael HaVlad Mamzer, that an idol worshiper or an Eved or a slave that has intimacy and causes conception of a Jewish woman, the offspring, the child, is a mamzer, is illegitimate. And as such, the region is filled with a significant number of these kind of people, mamzerim. Mamzerim, as far as halacha is concerned, are Jews, but they're unacceptable to marry into the rank and file Jewish people. The other opinion is Mishum Benois Yerushalayim. The Gemara continues. Bishlo Lamandomer Mishum Avdei Shlomo. Things are understandable according to the opinion that Talmud is rendered unfit as far as accepting converts from there because of the Avdei Shlomo. Kosovar, he is of the opinion Oivei Kechavim Ve'Eben Habo Abbas Yisrael Havlad Mamzer, an idol worshiper or a slave that causes conception of a Jewish woman, the offspring is illegitimate. Elo lemandamer mishum benois Yerushalayim mai hi. But according to the opinion that the problem of Talmud is called is a problem as a result of the daughters of Jerusalem, what is that a reference to? Now, in order to keep the logical flow smooth, we skip the brackets momentarily, and you see the Gemara gives an explanation. B'shah shenichnesu adichovim lehechal, etc., and so forth. So that the Gemara, after the brackets, explains what the background to Benos Yerushalayim is. Within the brackets, there are two opinions as to the number of people involved in the incident that will be featured after the brackets. So hopefully the structure is clear. Now we'll go through the brackets. Bleak pligi ba Rav Yosef Rabbanon. Rav Yosef and the Rabbanon argue, but Travail Mishmei the Rabbo Bar Barachana both argue within the name of Rabbo Barachana. In other words, they argue as to what Rabbo said. Chad Omar Tracer Alfi Gavri Vishisa Alfi Kashtuye. One opinion says that the following incident will involve 12,000 men plus 6,000 archers. The Chad Omar Tracer Alfi Gavri. The other opinion is that there was a sum total of 12,000 men, Uminayu Shisa Alfi Kashtuye, and amongst the 12,000 men there were 6,000 of them that were archers. And what is the story involving these people? B'shal Shinichnesu Evdikachavim Lehechal. When the plunderers, the idol worshipper plunderers, came to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, Hakol Nifnu Al Kesef V'Zahav. All of them turned to the stockpiles of wealth, of gold and silver that were there. Vehaim, these 12,000, Nifnu Al Benois Yerushalayim. They were more interested in the girls, the Jewish girls of Yerushalayim. Shenema Noshim B'tzion Inu B'sulo Sporei Yehuda. The Pasuk in Echa reflects that there was mass raping that took place at that time. So the apparently these idol worshippers were from Talmud, as we're saying. This is one of the explanations as to why Talmud is unacceptable as far as accepting converts from there. These plunderers seem to have come from Talmud, took their female spoils with them, and the relationship between an idol worshipper and the Jewish girl produces mamzerus. As we continue, we see triangles introducing Maimro's comments made by Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni in the name of Rav Yonasan. Omer Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Omer Rav Yonasan, Posuk Zeh Sar HaOilom Omroi, Nar Hoisi Gam Zokanti. This posuk was referred to back on Omer Aleph, hence we're referring to it over here, and that's why we also have an arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text where you can find back on Omer Aleph where this quote came from. The posuk was quoted there, and here the Gemara, it's interesting, the structure of these two lines is interesting, where the Rabbi Yonasan tells us this was stated by the Sar HaOlam, and now for clarification purposes, the Gemara goes over who, inquires as to who said it, and we'll come to this conclusion. Man Amre, who said this pasuk that I was once young and now I am old? Ilemo kutsho brichu. And if you say, by the way, you should note that the Pasuk itself is quoted in the book of Psalms, and the issue is who said it. If you say the Almighty said it, it's not appropriate. Mi iko zikno kame. The Almighty is above time. The concept of age, I am aged, is of no relevance to the Almighty. V'ela, David Amrei, maybe David, who is credited as being the compiler of many of the Psalms in the book of Tehillim, but it wouldn't be appropriate for him either. Mi koshish kulehai? Did he become so old? The Pasuk says, I was youthful and now I've become old. David HaMelech died at age 70. To announce that I am very old wouldn't seem appropriate to him. Elo shma mino, rather we must conclude Sar HaOlam Omro. Sar HaOlam is a reference to a great angel that was created by the Almighty, so the issue of time has relevance to an angel, but many years have passed. He's much older now. Many years have gone by since his creation, and hence zikno is appropriate. The Omar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Omar Rav Yonasan, Mai Dichtiv Yodoi Poras Tsar Al Kol Machmadeho. His hand stretched out, spread over with pain over all its desirous goods. Ze Amon Umoav. This is a reference to Amon and Moav. We saw them referred to also earlier today in our shiur regarding the areas that were not re-sanctified with the sanctity of the land of Israel. So, Bishah Shenichnesu, and this house marking you can see appears again. It introduces the time period of the plundering of the Beis HaMikdash, and you can see we have a slash underline of what they did. So, when the idol worshippers came to plunder the Beis HaMikdash, so the bulk of the plunderers turned to the stockpiles of silver and gold. The Haim Nifnu al Sefer Amon and Moav, the plunderers that were from Amon and Moav, they sought out Machmadeha. By the way, the Gemara elsewhere in Shas, in the context of King Ahab, Achov HaMelech, you see the word Machmad Einecho, Machmad referring to the Sefer Torah. So here too, the word Machmadel, its desirous item, is the Sefer Torah. They turned to the Sefer Torah, Omru, and they declared, Ze Shekosuv Bo, Lo Yovo Amoni Umoi V'Begal Hashem. The Torah warns against Ammonites and Moabites, male Ammonites and Moabites, from entering the Jewish people. So they were infuriated with this second-class treatment that the Torah accords to them. Yisoref Ba'esh, let it, the Torah, be burnt in fire. Hence, it's interesting, you can see their wrath and frustration with the Torah overcame, was stronger than their desire for gold and silver. The pasuk says in Eichot Tziva Hashem Liankiv Svivav Tzorov. This pasuk is of very dramatic, timeless proportions, and that is that the Almighty has commanded and arranged that wherever the Jewish people are located, they're always to be surrounded by oppressors. Whether it's Jewish neighborhoods that are surrounded by people that are that show antipathy toward the Jewish residents, or it's the land of Israel that is surrounded by barbaric enemies of the Jews that are seeking out its destruction. There is no wonder to that. You see that that's what Hashem has in store. It might be understood as a means of the Almighty trying to keep the Jewish people at bay. In other words, it's like the owner with a dog, a ferocious dog on a leash, that if someone upsets the owner, so he releases the dog. Hence, the Jewish people there's an attempt, we'll say, on the part of the Almighty to keep the Jewish people in check, and making sure that then and he accomplishes that by having the enemies of the Jews around, so that when the Jews keep the Torah and mitzvahs, the enemies are at bay; they don't attack. But when the Jews start abrogating the divine treaty, so the enemies are released by the Master, by the Almighty, and they do what we tragically know are capable of doing. So the Pasuk says that Hashem has commanded that around Jacob there shall be his oppressors. Omar Rav, Kigon, Humanya, Lefumnaro. Pumnaro was a Jewish neighbor, a Jewish location. There were poor Jews that lived there. And Humanya was a Greek settlement that used to oppress the Jews of Pumnaro. So if you can relate to the Humanya Pumnaro setup, you understand what this Pasuk is referring to. And ironically, or maybe not ironically, the name of the oppressors is Humanya. Reminds you of humanity or humaneness. And if I may add, editorially speaking, when people practice humaneness and humanity and humanism, and it's practiced in isolation, in a void, disconnected from the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu, so you can have very humane cultured people like the Germans of pre-World War II, and all the love of animals that they professed, and humaneness, humane society, humanity, all those wonderful, lofty concepts, but it leads to the monster of Nazism once again, when this concept of humaneness, humanity exists in a void. That's just by way of editorial comment, something to think about. I often think to myself about how dangerous it is to believe in the concept of humanity and humaneness and culture and all of those lofty concepts divorced from a divine command of God Almighty and the Torah of Israel, and look at what that very concept and culture can lead to. It leads to the greatest monster that man has known in recent times. As the Gemara goes on, we see a new marking on the side. We have a Nosei Mivneh heading. You notice a diamond that appears. This is introduced on the side as Shnei Deos Al Oived Kechovim Shekidesh Isha Bizman Hazeh. Two opinions regarding a Gentile, an idol worshiper that betroths or marries a Jewish woman nowadays, Be'ezor Shegurshu Elov Aseres HaShevotim, regarding geographic areas unto which were exiled the 10 tribes constituting the northern kingdom of Israel. Ha'im Anshe HaMokoim B'chashash Mamzerus O Goyim Gemurim. Do we look at the inhabitants of those regions as as being suspect of Mamzerim, or as total Gentiles? Once again, the 10 tribes, the northern kingdom of Israel, in the time of the Assyrian king Sanherib, who overran the northern portion of Israel, he exiled, he believed in population transfer, so he exiled the local inhabitants the 10 tribes and cast them into other land regions. The Gemara will refer to them by name. I cannot say that we know for sure where these places are today, even though there are researchers that delve into this area. Nevertheless, we want to know, what is the status of people in those areas? Are they viewed as chashash mamzerus or as total goyim, total Gentiles? Again, take note of the fact that we have two opinions, and the number one is here, Rav Asi's opinion, and on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, you'll notice several lines from the top, five lines from the top, a second approach. The Gemara, Omar of Yehuda, Omar of Asi, Oyve Kichovim Shekidesh Bizman Hazeh, Choshishin Likidushin, a Gentile that offers money to a Jewish woman nowadays, we consider that maybe she is considered married. And we speak married, we're not talking in terms of secular legal systems, we're talking strictly in terms of halacha. Does halacha view her as a married woman or as a single woman? So the statement made by Rav Asi indicates that an idol worshiper, a Gentile nowadays that offers money to a Jewish woman in as an act of marriage, we consider her married. And we consider her married in terms of we're choshesh likidushin. We consider the possibility of her being married. Shemo me'aseres hashvotim hu. This man might be from the original 10 tribes. Rashi says me'aseres hashvotim hu shenosu oivdois kechavim v'kosover doivedis kechavim shi'oldo mi'Yisrael havlad mamzer v'choshishin likidushin mamzer. The thinking right now is that a man from the 10 tribes that impregnated a non-Jewish woman and produced a child, that the child would be considered a mamzer. Now, a mamzer is technically speaking a Jew, and as a Jew, he is capable of consummating a marriage, of creating a marital status. The Gemara asks, how can such a broad statement be made by Rav Asi that all idol worshippers, all Gentiles nowadays might be descendants from the 10 tribes? Well, called the Porish, Meruba Porish. Anyone who comes from some other area, he is said to come from the majority. And the majority of the world's population are not from the 10 tribes. So the Gemara answers as to what is the basis of Rav Asi's understanding is beduchto dekvi. We're not talking about, he's not talking about Gentiles in general, but if you go to duchto means place, dekvi, that they were established. If you go to the place, to the regions where the 10 tribes had been exiled, and you see a man who doesn't appear to be Jewish per se, just a member of that society, offering kiddushin, Kesef Kiddushin, offering marriage to a Jewish girl, you have to suspect that maybe she is considered now married. The Omar Rabbi Abba Bar Kana. Here we cite a Pasuk, and the Gemara will explain the names in the Pasuk. These are land locations unto which the 10 tribes had been exiled. The Pasuk says, Vayanchem Bachlach Uvechavor Nahar Goizon Viore Modai. And now the Gemara takes the Pasuk, or breaks it apart name by name, giving alternative names to the places. You have a scriptural name and then a name that was more familiar at the time of the Talmud, so they could identify the location. So the scriptural name of Chlach ze Chilzon. Chilzon was a place that was known to the Gemara. V'chavor, Zu, we're at the top of Daf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, Hadayev. That's a place called Hadayev. Nahar Goizon, Zu Ginzak. The Ore Modai, here there are two versions as to what Ore Modai is. Zu Hamdon v'chavrusel, the Amrilo Zu Nihar v'chavrusel. So one opinion says it's Hamdon and Chavrusel, and the other Nihar v'chavrusel. Chavrusel, man. what do you mean by chavrusa? Chavrusa might very well mean adjoining places, from the word chibur, is to attach places that are attached, suburbs, surrounding areas. So what is meant by chavrusa? Omar Shmuel, krach mushchi, chidki, vidumkaya. Again, these are places that were known to the Talmud. Om Rabbi Yochanan, v'kulon lifsol. Rashi at the top says, lifsol rubon mamzerim. Rove of the population in these places would be considered illegitimate as far as marrying into the Jewish people that have a Jewish genealogy to them. Why? Shinitmu benois aseres hashivotim ba'ovei kechavim. Daughters from the original 10 tribes got intermingled in intimacy with the idol worshippers. Uvneim harehim ki Yisraelim. Their descendants are, technically speaking, Jews. V'noig ben isur mamzerus, and the rules of illegitimacy apply. V'hein lo nizaru, they were not careful. V'nosu ze achoisoi odbito v'arehein mamzerim. It would seem from this that the issue isn't necessarily mamzerus created by the by simple goy having relations with the Jewish woman, but the children could have in fact be viewed as Rashi says Yisraelim. However, as time went on, they were very immoral in terms of whom they cohabited with. As the Gemara says, this one would marry his sister or his daughter, and that would produce mamzerim according to all opinions. As we saw in Omid Aleph, Rabbi Yehuda, he had quoted Rav Asi. He was our Roman numeral number one. Rabbi Yehuda continues, and he said, Ki amriso kamei de Shmuel, when I said this to Shmuel. Now, what is that a reference to? When I said Rav Asi's teaching that were choshesh for Kiddushin. And we saw that in the context of an Oved Kochovim, that is Mekadesh Bizman Azeh, a male Gentile having married a Jewish woman, were choshesh for the Kiddushin. So that was said to Shmuel. Omar Lay. Shmuel responds, Bincho habo min ha-Yisraelis korui bincho. A child that is born from a Jewish mother is called your son, meaning a Jewish child. Ve'ein bincho habo min ha-Yisraelis kechovim korui bincho elo bino. However, a child born from a non-Jewish woman, from an idol worshiper female, who bears a child from having intimacy with a Jewish man, that product, that child is not called your son. It's not called a Jewish child. It's called her child. Her child, the Ovedus Kechovim, a Gentile child. The Gemara asks, the Ha'ika Bonois. Bonos is a reference to Benos Yisrael, Jewish women that had children from Goyim, and according to what you are saying, those would be considered Jewish children. So what Shmuel seemed to be reacting is kind of incomplete. Rav Asi said that we are choshesh for Kiddushin. And Shmuel says in response, you don't have to be choshesh for Kiddushin, because all that would have happened there with the when discussing the issue of the Aseres HaShvatim, Shmuel is saying, well, the only thing that really happened over there was Jewish men having intimacy with Goyish women, and the children produced from that union are Goyim, are non-Jews. So there's no reason to be choshesh for the Kiddushin. The Gemara then asks back on Shmuel, but what about the Jewish women? The Omar Ravina Shmamina Ben Bitcho Habo Al Ha'oive Kechavim Korig Bincho. This Gemara is kind of abbreviated, but it's based on a Pasuk analysis that we're not going to get into right now. But the result of that Pasuk analysis is that the child of your daughter, meaning Jewish daughter that had relations with a Goyish man, with an idol worshiper man, is called your child. It's called a Jewish child. Therefore, in the area that the 10 tribes had been exiled to, there is what to be choshesh for. There is the problem of the Jewish women having conceived from the Gentile men. So how can you, Shmuel, be so sure that there is no grounds for being choshesh for kiddushin? You're trying to argue that the only thing that took place over there was conception of Jewish men with Gentile women. But what about the flip side of that? So we answer, you know why Shmuel was not concerned with that? Gemiri, we have a tradition, the Bin Sada Hudora, the Jewish women of that generation of the exile of the 10 tribes, it's Deruya Itzru, they became barren. So that in that generation, there were no children born from the Jewish women that had been exiled. Only non-Jewish women were producing children from their intimacy with Jewish men. And as far as Shmuel is concerned, those children coming from non-Jewish women are completely Gentile. Hence, the population in the areas that the 10 tribes were exiled to would not have produced a generation of Jewish children. And therefore, there's no reason to be choshesh for kiddushin. Iko di Amri, ki Amriso kame di Shmuel. Another version of this presentation of Rav Yehuda to Shmuel is Omale, lo zazu misham at shasum oivde kechavim gemurim. When I said this to Shmuel, so he said that they didn't move from there until they proclaimed the population of those areas that the 10 tribes were exiled to as full-fledged Gentiles. Shinemar bashem bogodu ki bonim zorim yolodu. They rebelled against God, producing strange foreign children, meaning no Jewish children were produced. Yosef Rav Yosef Achorei Rav Kana, Yosef Rav Kana Kamei de Rav Yehuda, V'Yosef V'Ko'amar. And Rav Yehuda said, Asidin Yisrael Ti'avdi Yumatoiva Ki Charvi Tarmud. The day will come that the Jews will make a holiday on the day that Tarmud is destroyed. The Gemara asks, V'Hochorev, but Tarmud is destroyed. The Gemara answers, Hahi Tomud Havoi. The place that's destroyed is Tomud, not Tarmud. Rav Ashi Omar, Rav Ashi has a different take on things. He says, Hainu Tarmud, Hainu Tomud. They are really one in the same. Achpule hu de michpal. It's an area, city, or an area that is doubled, meaning it spills over on two sides of one mountain. Chorev mehaigisa, oisif mehaigisa. It may be destroyed on one side, but it's inhabited on the other side. The chorev mehaigisa, and if it's destroyed on the other side, oisif mehaigisa, it's inhabited on this side. Now this Gemara is very likely a Gemara that's full of hints and deeper ideas that go considerably beyond issues of geography and ancient population centers. So with that in mind, we can continue realizing that there's much more depth more than that which we're simply translating. So that when mention was made of it being destroyed, it was referring to only one side. Yosef Rav Hamnuno Kamei de Ula for Kohavi Bishmaitza. Rav Hamnuno was seated in the presence of Ula, and Rav Hamnuno was raising questions in learning, in Torah learning. Omar, Ula reacted, Ma Gavra Uma Guvrei. Rashi says, Omar Ula Leidu Rav Hamnuno, Ma Gavra, Ma Gavra, Kamo Hu Godol. how great is this man if he has all of these questions? Ilav the harpanya mosay, or alternatively, how great this man would be if not for the fact that he comes from harpanya. Harpanya is the name of a place where the population does not have a pure genealogical background. They're not miyuchasim. So, in simple terms, Ula seems to be insulting Rav Hamnuna that he comes from a place where his background of purity is being questioned. Achsiv, so Rav Hamnuna was embarrassed. Amale, Ula sensed his embarrassment and he tries to rectify the situation. He says, Kesef Gugalta Lehecha Yahavis. Kesef Gugalta is a type of head tax. Where do you pay your head tax? Amale, the Pumnara, I pay my taxes in Pumnara. We saw actually earlier today Pumnara as a location of Jews. Poor Jews lived in Pumnara. Amale, so Ula says, Imkein mi Pumnara at, then you are from Pumnara, not a harpanya person. My harpanya, what is in the name? Omar of Izera, Har Shehakol Poinin Bo. The mountain, it's an abbreviation, Har Panya. You see the Hey Resh is Har, a mountain, Panya, Ponin, where everyone turns to. And Rashi explains, people that were puzzled, that had questionable Jewish genealogy, and hence could not find a suitable Jewish mate, would go there, where all the questionable ones gathered. B'masnisa Tana, in a Tanaic source, we have the following: Kol she'ein makir mishpachto v'shivtoi nifne l'sham. Anyone who didn't know from which family he came, nor which tribe he came from, he would turn there. Omar Rava v'hi amuka mishol, and it is deeper or more problematic than shol is purgatory, is gehenim. And regarding a certain point that the Gemara will mention momentarily, this point will become a little clearer. However, this entire Gemara, I can rest assured, is alluding to things that are, if you like the pun, much deeper. So Rava is saying that harpanya is deeper than sheol. Shenemar miyad sheol efdeim mimoves egoleim. Regarding Gehenim, regarding purgatory, sheol, the pasuk says a person who is sentenced to purgatory can be redeemed. The prophet says, I will, in the name of the Almighty, I will redeem them from sheol. The ilu psul ditu, however, when it comes to their, that's harpanya, their defect, less lehu takanta, the defect, the disqualification characteristic of harpanya, has no solution. There's a concept in Jewish halacha that once someone is labeled a mamzer, in other words, he is the result of an incestuous relationship, all his descendants therefrom remain mamzerim. The Gemara continues, psuli de harpanya mishum psule de meshon. As the Gemara continues, just note we're going from what we'll call worst to best. The psul, the disqualification of harpanya, comes from the fact that it was near Meshan, another place. So we have a list of places whose genealogical purity is under question. So harpanya comes as a result of Meshan. Upsuli de Meshan mishum psuli de Tarmod. Psuli de Tarmod mishum avde Shlomo. In other words, the root of the problem started back in the time of King Solomon's slaves cohabiting with Jewish women. V'hainu de Amri Inchi. Based on this, there is a saying, Kava Rabo v'kava Zuta. Kava is the name of a measure, a certain amount. A large measure, Kava Rabo, large measure, small measure, Megander v'ozu l'shol. They roll to purgatory. In this presentation, we're going to go from best to worst. So they roll to purgatory. Umishol l'tarmud, umitarmud l'meshan, umimeshan l'harpanya. You see, the last stop in this declining list of locations is harpanya. You can see that we've spilled over quite a bit from our Daf Yomi quota well into Daf Yud Zayin Omid Aleph, but it all, of course, was one continuum from the Gemara at the end of Tes Zayin Omid Beis. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our Shi'ur for today.